And we're back.
Hello.
Hello.
What is this? This is number 29, right?
29th.
The 29th? Yeah, I think so.
29th.
Right. I hope I'm right
Whatever.
About that.
It's
yeah.
It's a big
it's
number.
It's one. Yeah, the numbers just keep getting bigger. That's what happens to numbers. All right, so this is the Big Planet Comics Podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Nick.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Jared.
And we're here.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, so what's been going on, guys?
Some exciting movie news. Nick and I finally saw The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn.
You guys did. I did not see Tintin.
Didn't you have to clean the house or something?
Yeah, something. My reasoning is really weird. I feel like I haven't read all the Tintin comics.
Right.
And I feel like if I'm going to spend 2 hours with Tintin, I should just read more Tintin comics. Not that I did that.
That's a good point. Aww.
So how was it?
It was pretty great.
Yes. It was strange in some ways, but awesome.
Yeah, it was weird because it combined a bunch of the books and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it was Crab with the Golden Claw, Secret of the Unicorn, Red Rackham's Treasure, and maybe a bits and pieces from some other ones. So,
is one of them the main story?
Yeah, well, Secret of the Unicorn and Red Rackham's were one of those two stories that was, you know, the two-part over two books. So that was the main storyline, but definitely threw in some. I think Crab with the Golden Claws is the first time he meets Captain Haddock. And they definitely, that's a big part of it. And
yeah.
They get to run around the Sahara and crazy stuff.
Yeah, there's some amazing action sequences.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's a crazy fight scene with, like, pirate ships. And they're, like,
that was so good.
Two pirate ships, like, fighting each other. And they kind of, their masks get tangled. And the one ship is swinging over the other ship. And, like, pirates are jumping down. And then the one ship turns sideways. And they're all fighting, sword fighting sideways on the ship. And then there's an amazing chase scene at the end where they're going
tank
through the streets.
Going through an entire city. It was like a James Bond movie.
Sounds boring.
Ways. It's awesome. Yeah, and definitely Tintin running around with a gun shooting at people.
Yeah,
which is good.
It was.
I don't know why I think that's good. I'm like, yeah, there should be more kids movies where people have guns and they're shooting people.
Yeah,
I think I'm still mad about the E.T. special edition where they took out all the guns and replaced them with walkie-talkies.
Did they put them back in the new version?
No. I don't know.
This is definitely old school kind of like kids movie because Haddock is drunk all the whole time, and he's always drinking and talking about drinking.
Yeah, like, really.
And Snowy?
Yeah.
Snowy drinks some what is it, whiskey or something?
Yeah, well, there's some lot pooch. Of scotch drunk.
Yeah.
Some pooch hooch.
But, man, like, Captain Haddock's voice threw me. Like, he's...
A little
he's
bit. He's
British,
got like
but
a
kind of Scottish, like British. It was weird.
Kind of a Scottish
Do you know who did
accent.
His voice? It seems like there were a lot of good voice actors attached to
Tintin
this.
Tintin was good.
And Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, right? They were Thompson and Thompson.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They were really good.
Mm-hmm. They were pretty great. I forget who was Tintin. It was...
Jamie Bell,
maybe? Yeah, Jamie Bell, yeah.
I don't know what he's done.
I don't know who that is.
I don't either, but
he's
good
in stuff.
Oh, he's that guy from Tintin.
I think he's Billy Elliot.
Is he Billy Elliot?
I think so.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Well,
so I'm trying to think of what else has been going on. Jared, you've been setting up this ad that we're going to put. Magic Bullet is a local comics newspaper. It's like tabloid size. It's free, and lots of local people do comic strips in it. Nick and I each have a strip in the new one.
Yep.
Nick's is like a Mortal Kombat thing, and mine is the continuing adventures of the Insurrection Squad. It's kind of my... tribute to like Warlock comics and stuff like that.
Yeah, because you had the first part in the Magic Bolt 3, right?
Right, yeah. They're so kind of standalone stories.
Yeah, but this is number 4 that's coming out.
Yeah. And Jared, you've been working on a Big Planet ad, which is pretty exciting. We got a lot of good artists on that.
Yep. We're trying to do an ad because these are like an entire page of a strip. And so we're like, why not use an entire page to do 4 small ads? So we've got, let's see who we got.
Mark Burrier, right?
Mark Burrier's doing one. We got Lamar Abrams. We've got Coleman Engel and Brooke Allen.
Brooke Allen, who did Home for Mr. Easter, and Lamar Abrams, guy who does remake. Coleman Engel hasn't really put out anything yet, but he's amazing. And when
amazing
you guys
illustration.
See his stuff, he's great. Yeah. And Mark Burrier has been doing stuff forever.
He's done Rare Words. He designed skateboards. He's done a bunch of awesome mini comics.
He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
And they look cool.
They're all cool people.
But yeah. It's going to be awesome.
Yep.
Cool. So another thing, we did our big best of 2011 podcast last week.
Two hours long.
This one's probably gonna be 2 hours too. We got a lot of comics to talk about, but so we voted for our best on the podcast. You gotta listen to it to find out who won.
Yes.
but
nine
then
categories.
Yeah, we had 9 categories, and we've been doing I don't know what you would call it, like
polls.
The People's Choice Awards as well.
Yeah, the masses rioting awards.
So we narrowed everything down to like 10 for each one, and so we're letting people vote on them. So should we go through what the fans have been voting for?
Yeah, basically on our Facebook page at Big Planet Comics.
That's true.
Dang, I did it backwards.
We do have Facebook.com/BigPlanetComics.
Yes.
Also, you can get this on iTunes, and our Twitter's @BigPlanetComics.
Nice.
I forgot to say that.
All things I was going to remember. Yeah. But if you go to our Facebook page, we've been putting up a poll every like 2 days, basically, of one of these topics. So we've done 4 so far of the 9.
So let's go through best new series and see what people thought.
Okay.
I'm going to try to do these in order of which one's got the most votes. So starting off is iVampire, which got 0 votes. iVampire is a good series.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we shouldn't get into all these again because we talked about them at length. But next up was Punisher, which got 1 vote.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you know, it probably deserved that many. Swamp Thing got 2 votes.
Yep.
Swamp Thing's a good series, but it's tough competition. Here's one that surprised me. Ultimate Spider-Man only got 2 votes. Now, I think that made it into our top 3.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's a good one. Let's see. Wolverine and the X-Men got 3 votes.
Yep. Also nice. Amazing.
Batman got 3 votes.
Yep.
Let's see. Wonder Woman got 5 votes.
Wow.
That's really good.
So they're hopping up there now. Rachel Rising also got 2 votes. I should mention that.
Yep.
Animal Man got 8 votes.
Wow. I like the Animal Man.
But the winner.
Yep.
Daredevil.
Nice.
11 votes.
Nice.
And that's what we picked, too.
That was our winner.
We are the tastemakers.
We are the tastemakers. There were a couple of write-ins as well.
What you got?
Britt Schramm, he wrote in The Defenders, which almost made our top 10.
Only one issue came out
last year. Only one issue. Yeah. So
I see his point, though.
It's almost like a 2012 series.
Yeah. It could be on our best ongoing next year.
And then Patrick wrote in Non-Player.
He loved that.
Also not one issue.
Yeah, it was like one issue, so it just didn't make it. And
it probably deserved to be on there.
Doesn't really count as a series if there's only one issue.
And if number 2 comes out, we'll retroactively add this to the list.
Yeah. And Non-Player made it into our like best new artist or best artist
and
category.
Best single issue.
Issue. So it was in there. So I think we're pretty happy with that Daredevil won because Daredevil's been awesome. All right, so then moving on to best reprint. Captain Easy Volume 2, which I had to fight to get onto this list, got 0 votes.
Probably because nobody's read it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Tank Tankuro, another one that I was back in the corner of, also got 0 votes.
Nobody read it.
I think the reprint category is the most interesting because it's usually very expensive hardcovers of old stuff, and it's like very selective in the audience for it.
Yeah.
So unless you're like a comics fiend or like love old stuff, a lot of people just aren't going to pick this up.
Yeah. But then Death Ray, which actually sold pretty well, that also got 0 votes.
There you go.
But that's a weird one, too, because it just is just basically the comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pogo, 0 votes. Again, I just don't think people have read it.
Yeah.
Milk and Cheese, 0 votes.
Mm.
Yeah. A lot of these got 0 votes. But then Manara Library got 1 vote.
Yep. Nice.
Was that you, Jared?
It wasn't.
Was it not?
I haven't voted on this one yet because I want to read the new Pogo book again.
Oh, you haven't voted yet?
No, not in this category because I've read like the old Pogo, but I haven't looked at the new edition. So.
And then Blackjack and Pistol Whipped, Crime Does Not Pay, got 1 vote. And that's a cool book. The Ecstatics Omnibus got 3 votes. Nice. I just assumed that was all 3 of us.
I was not one of them.
Well, that's good. So somebody else, I voted for that.
Yeah, so did I.
Or maybe I voted for Donald Duck.
Oh.
A lot of my voting on this, I voted for things that were not the things we picked.
Well, we had a consensus thing on our podcast.
Yeah, that's true. So. Donald Duck Lost in the Andes got 5 votes.
Nice.
But then the winner was Hark a Vagrant with 6 votes.
She's got popularity going for her and the internet.
Yeah, people on the internet.
Carl Bark's blog has not been very popular.
It's true. And Facebook is on the internet.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right. And then we should go through best artist here.
Okay.
This one was kind of a blowout.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Travel. I'm just going to go through all the 0 votes. Travel Foreman, Francisco Francavilla, R.M. Guerra, Trad Moore, Jerome Pena, all 0 votes.
Wow. Crazy.
I know. But Marcos Martin got 1 vote. Ramon Perez, who did Tale of Sand, he got 1 vote.
Yep.
Nice.
Nate Simpson got 3 votes. Nice. So there's Nate Simpson coming through.
Yep.
J.H. Williams got 4 votes.
Nice.
Love that stuff.
And the winner.
Yes.
Craig Thompson with 7 votes.
There you go.
Which is what we picked.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. There was also a write-in. Mike Kogel, who always sends us questions and is a cool guy, he wrote... Chris Samness, which I think is
Samney.
Yeah, it's Samney.
Yeah.
I think that was me.
Oh, okay.
I typed it in wrong. Sorry.
No, that's all right. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
that was it was fun, and we're gonna have
and these polls are still open. So if you guys haven't voted yet, just go to our Facebook page and throw in your votes and comment and say why we're idiots. Or
but if they change, we're not gonna talk about these categories again.
We might if they if someone comes from behind and beats out the front runners, I will talk about it.
Tank Tankuro just needs 7 more votes.
There you go, folks.
It's 0 7 now, but Tank if it gets 7, fan.
Kevin's gonna create like 8 Facebook accounts.
I am. Yeah.
Tank Tankuro fan 1 has voted for it.
Yeah, and so. I don't know what the next ones are. Best mini series is, and then
best mini went up today, right?
Yeah,
and then what have we got best
or yesterday,
right? Yes, went up Wednesday. We've got best kids, best writer, best single issue, and what's the other one besides best graphic novel?
There's a best ongoing.
Best ongoing.
There we go. So
five,
those will be
five
going
more
up.
Coming up.
Yeah, we talked a lot about all this stuff. If you guys haven't listened to the Best of the Year podcast. We are convinced that it's our best podcast we've ever done.
Yep. It was pretty sweet. It's talking about fun, awesome stuff rather than us jibber-jabbering about silly things.
Yeah, or talking about comics that we don't like, and instead we were all talking about comics we do like.
Yeah, there wasn't a dud in the bunch.
Yeah, so let's get into this. Let's do some viewer mail. You guys ready?
Yep.
Oh, the viewer mail thing is different.
Weird.
But why?
But why?
You'll find out later.
Oh, no. I'm so nervous and excited.
So Mark Miller sent in a question. He said, with a couple of Batman-related exceptions, video games based on comic book properties tend to be pretty bad. I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah, sometimes.
There's been some pretty rough stuff.
There's one pretty good one.
Which one?
Marvel vs. Capcom.
Nick and I have been playing a lot of Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Oh, I got another
Jared
one.
Played it for a second.
Jared played it for a second. Jared, you do not like fighting games.
I'm so bad at them. Like,
I need to practice.
I played one of the old Star Wars ones, and I learned one combo for Boba Fett that if I had the right way, I would win, and every other time I'd fail. So.
That is the worst fighting game of all time. It's Star Wars, like Battle of Tetris Kai or whatever.
No, Masters of the Terrace Kazi or something.
Yeah.
Wasn't that one?
No?
I think that's
there another Star Wars fighting game?
That's the one.
Oh, maybe it was.
Was it like on PlayStation 1?
Probably. Yeah. I think it was.
Yeah, that game stinks.
Yeah. Yep.
It's better than the Wu-Tang fighting game.
Yeah, Wu-Tang.
I don't know if it is.
But Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is awesome. They just put out the new edition, and it's got like a bunch of new awesome Marvel characters like Nova and Ghost Rider and
Rocket Raccoon.
Doctor Strange.
MODOK.
Yeah, MODOK was in there, but MODOK is awesome.
I don't care, MODOK's
awesome. MODOK is awesome. But it's great.
Yes.
Nick was just trying to beat the game so he could fight Galactus.
Fight Galactus?
You fight Galactus.
Yeah, he's like the
is
final
he too
boss.
Scale?
Yeah.
So you're like punching his toe or something?
Punching his like face or his hand.
Yeah, it's just like his face takes
That's
up the
amazing.
Whole screen. Yeah.
That's yeah. great.
It must be it'll be pretty satisfying to beat Galactus with Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
And realistic.
Yeah.
True to the comics. If Squirrel Girl was in there.
I was about
there,
to say, where's
probably...
Squirrel Girl? I'll play her.
But and there have been some other good ones. The Spider-Man games that Neversoft put out were pretty solid for a while.
Got another one.
What one's good?
Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim game is great.
That was awesome.
Yep.
That is
Batman,
great.
Arkham Asylum.
Yeah,
he says
City
with a couple of Batman related exceptions.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, Arkham City is fantastic.
A couple X Men games that were really good.
X Men arcade game
and X Men Genesis games were really good too.
I don't know if I played any of those.
Yeah, those were really good.
Do they use Blast Core processing?
Probably.
So he says, "What comics would you like to see made into video games, and what video game studio would you like to see handle them?"
Whoa,
there's no need to limit this to superhero comics. He says,
"Nice."
So, Nick, you said you had one. What do you got?
I got one. Guardians of the Galaxy video game.
Oh, yeah.
Made by Treasure.
Oh, wow.
I think it would be pretty incredible.
People probably don't know who Treasure is. I can explain what they do a little bit.
They usually make 2D games. They made like Gunstar Heroes, Guardian Heroes. Right?
Yep, and they made an Astro Boy game that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, the Astro Boy game is great.
It's so good.
And I figured this would be a game where like you could play with multiple people, like each person controls one of the characters, but I think there could be a cool like single player mode where you use all the different people's abilities to get through different obstacles and stuff, because Treasure's good at making like unique fun obstacles and stuff, and they're mostly known for like really crazy action, which would be awesome for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, definitely, just totally over the top. Also, the guys that did Star Fox could make a pretty amazing yeah. Star Fox basically is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
What do you got, Jared? Or should we come back to you in a minute here?
My silly one would be Strangers in Paradise, where you have to, like, I don't know.
No, that's great. I mean,
by the Phoenix Wright guys?
That'd be amazing.
Or by like a dating sim.
Yeah.
I'd love to see an Orcstain game.
Nice.
Made by Bethesda, the guys who make Skyrim.
No, I was about to say, I was definitely have Bethesda do something, but it'd be like something based on like the John Carter or Warlord of Mars comics, or just some like, yeah, you're running around Mars fighting giant monsters and
or Conan
spaceship. Oh,
yeah.
Didn't they have a Conan game that was terrible?
They have a bunch of Conan games that are terrible.
An awesome Conan game would be good.
Yeah. But I feel like if you did Orcs, like the, like if it looked like Orcstain, yeah, and it was like this huge world,
yeah,
like you're, you know, you're buying weapons with grunches and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that would be incredible. I just love Orcstain.
Yep.
I love it.
That's true.
So hopefully that answers your question, Mark.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good question.
Though. Yeah. All right. So we've if you guys have questions, you can send them in to us.
You should.
Please do.
Please.
We like to answer them.
And whenever we talk to people, they're like, oh, I liked that podcast or that was interesting. And we're like, you should send us an email. We mean it. We like hearing from you guys.
John Gallagher also sent us a question this week, but it was, what are your guilty pleasures? And we answered that one. I can't remember which podcast it was on.
Oh, wait, in comics. Yeah, we did answer that one.
Yeah.
I thought he meant in general.
In general? Like Toblerones.
I was about to say chocolate.
Chocolate covered cherries.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. So send your questions into podcast@bigplanetcomics.com.
Right. Yes.
And we'll answer them.
Yes, sir.
All right. So we got a lot of comics to review this week.
Yep.
So let's get right into all of that.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. It's time for reviews.
All right. So,
sorry, I'm cracking up because I just noticed, are you playing a xylophone in that?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, it's a Glockenspiel.
A Glockenspiel. Like, I just hadn't really focused on what the intro was. That's
yeah,
amazing.
Just picture me here with my headphones on, playing a Glockenspiel, making that song. That is my life. All right. So, we talked about this week. We review a lot of number one issues.
We do.
And we always come out, we're like, well, it was kind of a number one issue. There was a lot of setup and stuff in it.
True.
So we're going to try to talk about some number two issues.
Nice.
Which seem to get a little more into the story.
Yeah. Yes.
So let's start off with one of those. The Activity number two by Nathan Edmondson and Mitch Garrod.
So basically this is, I think we described it as like the cleaner up special forces team. So they're kind of special forces crossed with CIA. They're the sneaky guys who go around and take care of problems in the U.S. intelligence world, whether it's kidnapping people or cleaning up sites when something terrible has gone wrong. So the first issue introduced the new member of the team who they kind of showed her recruited at the end with a flashback like 3 months or 3 years or whatever it was. And so we weren't sure if that was like going to be the big twist that she was working for someone else or something. And so the second issue shows, no, that was just her flashback to getting recruited. And so they just go on another mission with this one. I feel like this had kind of the same problems as the first issue in some ways. It was a really good adventure story, but just it didn't have that extra punch or hook or, I don't know, I was looking for something extra.
I thought there was a little bit more in it than the first issue, just in the sense that like the mission, the whole thing in the first issue was that like, hey, some of these missions are boring.
Yep.
And like,
and it was.
Yeah, but in this one, it's definitely more of like, they're like, you know, they're kind of going undercover and like killing these guys in this bar and stuff like that. It's a little more interesting,
yeah,
I feel
that
like.
That was cool.
And they're like setting it up and hiding the evidence so the police can find it, but sort of erasing all the traces that they were there. Yeah,
it was a much cooler mission.
But I feel like the punch in this that makes it a little more interesting is that they talk a lot about how when you do a job like this, you can't really talk to anybody about it. So
Right. Everything
becomes very like, I don't want to say incestuous, but like,
that's the word I was going
to
use.
Yeah. Like, you only really want to intermingle with people that kind of have this shared experience with you. And I thought that was pretty interesting, especially living in DC and knowing like a lot of government people that can't really talk about their jobs and stuff like that. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of a cool hook. It still hasn't grabbed me as much. I feel like Edmondson with, who is Jake Ellis, really grabbed my attention a lot.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then since then, he hasn't really done anything that's blown me away, unfortunately.
No. Like, well, I went back and reread one before I read the second issue. And the thing about one that's interesting is it's the original team before the new replacement girl comes in. They're on this crazy mission in the beginning where there's like down in Mexico and there's like a crazy deal going on and they like kill the lights and they kill everyone with like night vision goggles and then kidnap someone and drive them out to the desert and hand them over to other people. So they had the exciting, awesome mission. But then they introduce a new girl and goes on to the less exciting mission. So I feel like if it had been reversed, somehow that first issue would have had a lot more excitement and punch to it. You know?
I feel like they're trying to slowly kind of build the relationships between the characters
right.
and like show you kind of what they do normally. Because like what they do is kind of complicated and kind of hard to understand.
Right.
So I think that, you know, as it goes along, they'll be a little more like kind of intrigue in it and like little more twists and stuff.
Yeah, I will say this is like what Men of War from DC should have been. Like a cool character building series with occasional awesome missions.
And Men of War had that promise in the first issue, but I feel like it really hasn't delivered on it very much. Yeah, unfortunately. So Activity 2, it's still fun. You know, if you like stuff like The Losers or like Queen and Country, I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, it's good.
But it's not that killer comic like who was Jay Ellis was. Like The Killer. The Killer is a good comic.
It is.
All right, so moving on to Amazing Spider-Man number 677 by Mark Waid and Emma Rios. So we're not just doing number two issues this week. We're also doing number 677th issues. This was cool. This is the first part of a two-part Daredevil crossover.
Yep.
And this is written by the regular Daredevil writer and the art by Emma Rios.
So good.
She gets better all the time. I mean, she's been good for a long time.
Yeah.
Her Strange miniseries was great. Yep. And then her art on the Cloak and Dagger
astounding
thing was fantastic. And then this issue, I mean, she's even better.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So this is, I guess, they decided to do a crossover with Daredevil. They haven't done this kind of thing in a while where they just have like, you know, two issues of two different series kind of crossover without being like a huge event or something. And it's just like, but they got Mark Waid to give Dan Slott some time since Spider-Man comes out like twice a month or whatever.
True.
Give him a little break. But it's cool that Mark Waid's come back to Spider-Man because he was writing it during the Brand New Day stuff. And all of his Spider-Man stuff was really good in that time. And the story in this is pretty simple. It's like Daredevil is trying to solve something and then Spider-Man is also trying to solve the same thing. But there's really funny interactions with Spider-Man and Daredevil. Like there's a scene where Daredevil's talking to like what is she? Like
she's like his assistant.
Mayor? Yeah. No, she's like the mayor or
something. Oh, never mind.
She's not the mayor. She's some kind of like government official or whatever.
She's an important lady.
Yeah, yeah. And he's trying to tell her like stop calling me Daredevil, I'm not Daredevil. And then Spider-Man swings by, he's like, hey Daredevil, I need some help. And he's like, who's that? I can't see you, I'm blind.
Is that Foggy?
Yeah. There's really funny things like that throughout, and yeah, it's good.
And I mean, the key crux of it that ties them together is Black Cat, who's of course is, you know, a great Spider-Man foil / love interest, and then really plays well in the same way off of Daredevil. So like the three of them just work together very good as characters.
Yeah, it's cool. And the main story is kind of like, people think that Black Cat has robbed this place, and but Spider-Man knows that she hasn't because he basically spent the night trying to hook up with her because his girlfriend just broke up with him.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, that's the thing that's cool. It kind of ties into stuff that's happened in Spider-Man, but also in the stuff with Daredevil, so it's not really...
Yeah.
And it was a really fun issue, and like a good jumping on point if you just want to read get into Spider-Man, because Spider-Man's been great recently.
Yeah.
Or vice versa, if you haven't been reading Daredevil and you have been reading Spider-Man, there you go. They're both awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Daredevil's so good. Anyway. And this was definitely a really good issue. So, and if you read this, then you'll want to read Daredevil number 8 after this, because that'll be the second part. So, moving on to Batman Through the Looking Glass hardcover by Bruce Jones and Sam Keith. I guess I should probably talk about this.
Go for it.
So basically, this is a standalone, like, original graphic novel.
Was it originally supposed to be, though?
It seems like it was originally a 5-issue miniseries.
Yeah.
It's definitely broken up into issues inside of it, but it didn't come out that way.
Yeah.
It came out in this graphic novel. And it's basically a story about Batman being drugged and led by a childhood friend through this sort of Alice in Wonderland type world while he's like on mushrooms.
While he's trying to solve a crime.
Yeah, while he's trying to solve a crime at the same time. And it's got a lot of, you know, Alice in Wonderland imagery and a lot of really like heavy-handed Alice in Wonderland references.
Yeah.
I have to say Sam Keith, who I used to love when he did the Max, has really fallen off as far as art goes.
Well, that was interesting about this one. Is it like the chapter headings or whatever, there'd be like a splash page or something? Or like when he was drawing a close-up of a woman, you know, it was like his old style and you really see his passion in it. And then the other ones look like he had like penciled out rough sketches for these pages and just never come back to them. Like, it really felt like either he was rushed on this job or just didn't care.
Yeah, there was a lot,
really disappointing.
There's a lot of points where there's like characters talking to each other, but none of them have like faces or like.
Yeah, I feel like it's like you say, it's like at the beginning of each issue. I mean, even though they're not issues, he probably was excited about drawing, and then it seems like he gets just like bored, like way through. And there's a lot of really weird, rough stuff. Like you can see like his pencils that haven't been erased, and a lot of weird stuff like that. But besides the art, I mean, which as we've said, is not so great.
I mean, it's cartoony. It's Sam Keith is appropriate, I think, for an Alice in Wonderland story. It's just, it feels like he didn't try. Like, if he'd applied his efforts to, like, those few pages where you're like, oh, man, Keith is still awesome. And then you're like, oh.
Yeah.
So it would have been perfect.
Yeah, you got to wonder what went wrong that caused them to not put this out in a miniseries as well.
Probably the New 52 or something.
Yeah, I feel like it might have been, like, because Sam Keith was doing Batman Confidential.
Oh.
I feel like maybe this was going to be, like, the next story arc in Batman Confidential, and he'd already started it, and they were like, we're changing the universe.
Yeah, and there's not really a place for it in the new universe, so just release it as a graphic novel.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the story?
I thought the story was fun.
Yeah,
it wasn't great, but it was good.
I thought the story was all right. It was about a childhood friend that Bruce Wayne had and kind of a new character that they introduced. And I thought that was kind of an interesting element. And, you know, it wasn't great.
But no, they had some really good interactions, because he's hallucinating the whole time. So he's off on this quest. But then, Alfred and Robin are, trying to deal with crazy drugged out Batman on this quest. So there's a lot of really hilarious interactions with them trying to deal with how do you stop Batman or how do you help him when he's in this state.
I feel like the bar is set so high for original Batman graphic novel, like standalone graphic novel type stories with stuff like Arkham Asylum and Batman Year One and Dark Knight Returns and stuff.
Yeah.
That this certainly doesn't stand in that
no
canon.
I did not like it.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I couldn't get past I don't know. I read the first, issue, and then after the second one, I was like, I'm not reading this anymore.
Yeah.
It was just I read so many good Batman stories.
That's true.
The art was so bad that I just couldn't do it anymore. It was just it was cool that there was all the kind of trippy stuff, but it was just there was just too much of it. There was so much weird trippy stuff that I kept losing track of what the story was.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, some of the panel layouts are really weird too. He actually has to draw arrows to show people how to read it and stuff,
and some of
which
the
is
weird,
never a good sign.
The weird story, the weird choices, where does this take place? Dick Grayson is Robin, but he's never met the Mad Hatter before. It was weird.
Batman hadn't really met the Mad Hatter.
Yeah, what universe does this take place in?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a thing that has its problems.
I
wasn't super excited when I was reading it. I mean, it's, I don't know.
You love Batman, so, it doesn't really matter. You're I'll read a Batman story.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true, but yeah. Anyway.
It was still better than Batman Dark Knight.
Yeah, that's probably true, Batty Boy.
Batty Boy.
All right, so moving on to Brilliant Number 2 by Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley. Brilliant Number 1 came out
six years ago.
Well, I looked in the back of this issue, and he said the next volume, issue 3, should be out 54 days from now. So it's on a 2-month in-between schedule. But even with that, was it late?
I think it was a little bit late besides that.
Yeah.
The first issue of this kind of set up the idea of these super smart kids that have kind of discovered how to create superpowers.
Yep.
And this just kind of continues along with that story.
Yeah, I was, when we did the review of this first one when it came out, I was not very impressed with it. And I went back and reread this one again before the new number 2, and I liked it a lot more. I picked up on a lot more things they're doing. They label all the characters by name, as in a little panel when they show up. So you get to know who the important characters are.
Yeah.
And having read it once, I know why this crazy superpowered bank robbery at the beginning is important. So the second one, I don't know. I just felt, having read the two of them together, I think it flowed together really well.
I
liked it more.
Not having read the first one since it came out, they were the bank robbery, blah, blah, blah. I was what bank robbery? I didn't even remember it.
Well, it's the smartest, kind of the alpha dude of this group has actually the one who's given himself superpowers. You see in the second issue, none of the rest of them were brave or crazy enough to do it. He has gone out and committed a bank robbery just to see if he can use his powers, and he did. But the issue 2 shows that the powers are unstable, so they brought in the new character to try and help him fix himself.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. That's a pretty cool idea. It's pretty smart, and I don't know. All the characters are well written, and I feel like it could end up going to some pretty cool places. It's a little different from normal kind of superpowered thing. It's not about them having powers and fighting things. It's about them trying to create superpowers and get rich, basically.
I thought the second issue was pretty interesting. I'm still not a fan. I've never been a fan of Mark Bagley.
Yeah.
Especially you look at the sort of caliber of artists that are on all these other Icon books.
True. Yeah.
The guys like Sean Phillips and Lionel Yu and John Romita Jr. and
You know.
I mean, the opening scene is the superpower dude getting shot in the face with a bullet that bounces off of him, basically. Yeah. And it just didn't look cool. You know, it happened, but you're like, eh. And that could have been one of the most amazing scenes in the whole comic, but.
Yeah, But it's still good. I mean, yeah. I should say that, you know, that doesn't detract from it too much. I mean, Mark Bagley is a really solid storyteller.
True. Yeah.
There's a reason he was able to put out good, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man comics every 3 weeks for however many years.
Yeah, that's true.
Like 10 years. I mean, it's insane. But no, brilliant too. It was cool.
Yeah.
It's a good comic. All right. So moving on to The Curse of the Wendigo softcover by Matthew Massoff and Charlie Adlard.
I want to just mention in the back of this, they have some cool little interviews with Adlard and Massoff, just like two or three pages, just talking to him about this book and stuff. Adlard says he draws an issue of Walking Dead every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And when he's in a hurry, he does it in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and Walking Dead doesn't look bad.
Nope.
Like ever.
Yeah. And he spends like his off time doing stuff like this.
Yeah. So, the basic idea of this comic is really cool. It was a European album that came out. It's like 48 pages.
Yep.
But a complete story. And they even talk about how Europeans work so much differently than Americans, and that like they'll take what would be a four-issue miniseries or something and really compact it into 48 pages. Like Adler said, when he works on Walking Dead, he does like 5 panels a page on average, but this has like 9 panels a page on average. But the basic story is it takes place in it's in France, right?
Yep.
In World War One.
Yep.
And it's the French are fighting the Germans. And people from both sides keep disappearing and dying. So oddly enough, and almost kind of unbelievably, they pick like 3 Germans and 3 French guys and like an American or whatever to go together and like research this and find out what's going on.
All right.
And then that's I don't know how much I want to say about like what it is, because it's such the crux of the story.
Cool.
But it's this supernatural element that they kind of that they're kind of investigating, and it turns into more of a horror story.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's just really well done. Actually, I think it's probably the best art I've ever seen from Charlie Adler.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's the first time you've seen him in color too, so I think it's a little different, because I think he uses a little more like shading and stuff in Walking Dead, just to make up
for the lack of.
Yeah, they use a lot of like heavy blacks and stuff in Walking Dead, and that's not in here as much. It's a little bit finer than what he does in Walking Dead. But there's like a really good atmosphere in this, and it's really creepy, and it's well done. And then the story's
cool.
It's got a lot of twists and turns, and it gets pretty gruesome, but I don't know. It's great.
It's great. Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I don't know how much to say without giving it away.
Yeah, the main element of the story is such like a, it's so much what the story is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to give too much away, but to me, it's, when we talked about Last Battle a few weeks ago,
right,
and like how they managed to put like what felt like a really full story in like 48 pages, I feel like the same is true of this.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, this is like epic. Like, it feels like it could be a movie easily, you know?
Yeah, definitely. What'd you think, Jared?
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'll say it's in the title right there. Curse of the Wendigo. All right, a Wendigo is the myth of a monster that feasts on people. So basically, like Kevin said, the story is in between the trenches of the Germans and the French, the no man's land, where it's just nobody, you know, it's a big area, so that makes sense why they had the two patrols working together. But, you know, out there, people are shooting at you all the time. There's poison gas attacks going on. Nobody really goes out there, because if they do, they get shot. So it's like this unknown land, and they have to go investigate, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like Ravenous.
Yes.
There's a thing in the back, too, that talks about another comic that this guy, that the writer has written.
Oh, yeah.
About, like British desert rats in World War II fighting, panzer tanks and genies.
Yeah. I was like, sold.
Yeah. So hopefully that'll come out as well.
Yeah.
And Adlert says in the back he's going to be doing more of these like European style like small graphic novel things. So
awesome.
I'm pretty excited about that, because this was great.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to Dark Matter number 1 of 4 by Joseph Maliozzi and Paul Mooley, and drawn by Gary Brown.
Good old Gary Brown.
Governor Gary Brown.
Yeah. Well, this is basically kind of it's kind of almost like a, I don't know, a cliched sci-fi story where like
a pandemic.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool. I like the setup. Like a bunch of people will wake up from like cryogenic sleep, and none of them remember who they are or where they are or what they're doing, and they're all in a spaceship that's like about to shut down because the power levels are depleting. And so they all like go slowly figure out like, oh, maybe we're like this science team that had to do, you know, was on some mission. And then they're like, they open another thing like, oh, somebody else is in this box. And it's this crazy like, I don't even know what was it, like a robot or something, an android. It was some kind of thing that like tried to kill them all. It was like the security system for the ship. And it's pretty neat, because it sets up a lot of like cool little twists. And it's like one of us is a traitor, because they figure out like, you know, the ship can only been shut down from the inside. And
so it's like somebody, it's like M. Night Shyamalan's Devil.
Yeah. One of us is the devil.
One of us is the devil.
But it's cool.
Yeah. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
It was very, like you said, it's a very cliched kind of story, but it's also the kind of story that I love. Like, yeah. I love Alien. Yeah.
Like we were just talking about, why aren't there more good sci-fi comics and stuff? This is what should be coming out all the time.
Yeah, and so. It's like, even if this isn't a home run, it's still like a cool kind of moody sci-fi comic.
Yeah, it's really good. I think I'll read double. All of it. I mean,
yeah, I'll definitely read the next issue. Yeah, it's a double. It's a not double. Even a triple.
Yeah, but it has a cool twist at the end.
Yeah,
it's pretty neat. Like, because they're like flying through space the whole time alone. Well, I don't know if I want to tell you what happens at the end.
Yeah,
no. Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
But there's a cool twist at the end.
Yeah, it definitely makes things more exciting at the end. I thought the art was a little sketchy.
Yeah.
Maybe,
serviceable, but not great.
Maybe not the best. Oh, my biggest problem is, and this sometimes happens with ensemble casts, I didn't really get a sense of any personality from any of the characters. Everybody's just sort of going through the motions a little bit.
Yeah, well, also none of them remember who they are.
Yes.
Well, they don't really have personalities. They just, none of them remembers anything except for basic. But it's kind of, you get a little bit of that because they each have different talents that come out.
Yeah,
like they start remembering things.
I thought that was the coolest bit, where like they go into a room and it's like, oh, here's the armory, and the guy's like, I remember how to load all these guns.
Yeah, and this one lady's like, here's some swords, and the guy's like, do you know how to use this? And she does like a bunch of flips. And there's like a little kid who starts doing all these crazy math equations and stuff.
Yeah.
So like they're all kind of defined by their abilities and
rather than any personality.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and what I think that's interesting.
It's part
that's
of the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it is part of the story, but it's a part of the story that makes the story slightly less interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it'll be cool once they start figuring out who they are and what's going on.
Yeah, we'll see. Is this Dark Horse or is this? I think it was a Dark Horse book. Yeah.
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was all right.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to a book that we're gonna try to talk about, but it might be tough.
Oh, snap. Yeah.
This is this is Gangster Rap Posse number 2.
Hell yeah.
By Benjamin Mara. All right, I'm going to try to talk about this without saying
too much.
All right, so this is a very offensive comic. I think that's fair,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so basically, Benjamin Mara is a really interesting artist. He's done, he does a series called Night Business, which is very much based on like kind of old Brian De Palma movies and like these kind of stripper action horror things from the 80s, like, you know, just how things were, like Cobra and stuff
Ben
like that.
Ben Mara loves the 80s.
Ben Mara does love the 80s. And, he did like that Adventures of Maureen Dowd comic, which is he just does insane stuff. He did the cover for like a Little B mixtape. But Gangster Rap Posse is his comic about basically like NWA.
Yes.
It takes place in 1991. And these guys are like
in California,
in South Central.
They're like such a famous rap group that they kind of get away with lots of crazy stuff.
Right.
And so they're murdering people all the time. And God,
having vast amounts of sex with
they
people.
Have they
doing
do that
a
smoking
lot of
crack
drugs.
But also like producing music and stuff. So the basic plot of Gangsta Rap Posse 2, this is where it's gonna get tough.
I'll say it. So everything that gangsta rappers rap about, these guys do for real,
right?
That's basically that's the gag of this. Like, this is not done as a straight up serious comic. This is obviously a hilarious parody of it.
Yeah, it's like a satire.
Yeah, and it's almost like a parody of like people's views of those things too, like what people think gangster rappers actually do, you know. And it's and in that way it's interesting, and it gets away with a lot of stuff that it wouldn't be able to get away with. The style of the art is very, I don't want to say amateur because it's not, because he knows exactly what he's doing. It's very much based on this series of comics that came out in I think the early 90s called Raw Deal, which is like Gangster Rap Posse if Gangster Rap Posse was
serious
or not serious, but like I don't even know how to explain it.
The
but,
intent of the creator was a serious story.
But so the basic plot of this is the police are after Gangster Rap Posse
as usual,
and
the mayor's after
Gangster Rap Posse
and an old funk band
and so basically they can't handle them alone. So basically this character who's basically George Clinton says, I'm gonna help you out because I hate these guys because they sample my music and they don't pay me. So then they go to jail to break out Bootsy Collins who is like an assassin. And then lots of murders happen and other terrible things that I don't want to talk about.
A lot of white supremacists they have to fight. They have to fight the cops and they have to fight the crooked mayor. And
there's a part where they wipe out like a white supremacist like
rallies,
like skinhead rally thing. Yeah. That's so hilarious. I don't.
And they have sex with all their girlfriends.
They do, yeah. And then they sell them to like a Chechenian pimp.
Yeah,
it's insane. It's
awesome. See, like everything we've just said makes it sound like the worst comic ever, but it's probably the best comic ever.
It is probably
for some
It's probably my favorite comic that came out this week. Yeah. For sure. I love Benjamin Mara.
Yeah. Yeah.
He does great stuff. Anyway, that's Gangster Rap Posse. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah. If this at all, if you're not like shaking your head and stopping this podcast and never listening to us again, you should come in and check it out.
Yeah.
And
I will say there's not
up your own mind.
There is not a single line from the book that we could quote on the air.
No.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's pretty bad.
Yep.
Okay. So moving on to Jim Henson's Dark Crystal 1 Creation Myths hardcover by, it says Brian Holguin, but wasn't this written by Brian?
No, Frood did like the design for the movie and stuff.
But, oh, but he didn't actually
write
this.
Holguin actually wrote this.
Okay, so this is written by Brian Holguin and Alex Sheikman and... Oh, no. It's written by Brian Holguin, sorry. And it's drawn by Alex Sheikman and Lizzie John.
There you go.
Yeah, and this was I thought this was actually really good.
This is another Archaea book like we were talking about. They're just doing these amazing production books that just like look beautiful. And this one is, for people who don't remember, The Dark Crystal was an awesome, weird Henson fantasy movie with lots of awesome Muppets. That came out in mid-80s?
Yeah, I think that's right.
But yeah, fantasy world with, you know, vaguely elf-like characters and big monsters and stuff and lots of adventures. This is a prequel to that movie set back before any of these monsters have shown up. So it's just like a dangerous planet, but not with evil things running around. And so it's like thousands of years.
I think, I think I feel like for people that like Dark Crystal, this is kind of like, get to see how the Dark Crystal becomes the Dark Crystal.
Because
in the beginning of this, it's like the Bright Crystal. And it's like, it's pretty cool. It's got a lot of ties to the original movie. And it's a little weird because like it's mostly like this anonymous character telling you this story. And there's a lot of like narration. Like,
well, she's not an anonymous character, though. I mean, she was in Dark Crystal.
Ogre. No, but she's not narrating. It's somebody else's.
Someone else.
Oh, like yeah. Dude, sorry. Yeah.
Some dude in a cloak or whatever. who you never actually find out. This is part one of like three books or whatever.
I think it was either Bert or Ernie.
Yeah.
Sure.
But it's cool. Like, it's kind of weird because like for most of it, it's like all narration and it's pretty good. But it's like you don't really get to know the characters because it's like narrated by this guy and like. But then near the end, it becomes more of like a straight up comic, and there's a lot of cool like twists and revelations, and it seems like it'll get crazier and crazier as it goes along.
Yeah, I think you're right though. Like for fans of Dark Crystal, this is like, it seems like basically what they did is they took the movie Bible. Like basically, when people make movies, they kind of come up with the whole backstory, and so it seems like they're taking that and adapting it into a comic, which is, you know, interesting. But there's also a reason why you pick
the good, exciting stuff.
Yeah.
That's why you make episodes 4 to 6 instead of 1 to 3 of Star Wars.
Exactly. So this is like, you know, it's like the creation story basically for Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
But the art's good. Yeah. It's very like digitally painted, but it works for the Dark Crystal stuff. And, you know, there's definitely some intrigue in the story. There's like the main character is like kind of the mother of the earth. She's like a Gaia type character.
Yeah.
And
that's Ogre, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in the movie, and, like, she's much cooler and more important in this than she was sort of in the movie.
Yeah, she was kind of a Yoda-type character in the movie.
Yeah, you kind of see, like, how she loses her eye. And like,
yeah, and her cadence is even similar to Yoda.
It's interesting.
And she's got her son is introduced in this, who...
Well, and that's what I think is kind of the interesting part, is, like...
he's not in the movie.
Nope.
No.
And they're like immortal or whatever. They live for like centuries.
Yeah, but he also causes some trouble that might make him not live through this.
Yeah.
I should say this is the first part of what's meant to be a trilogy of graphic novels. It's kind of going to tell the story of the world of Dark Crystal. But
it's interesting that he's like, he's in this and you know that he's not going to survive this or something's going to happen to him, you know?
So, I don't know. It's like about this kind of alien race of like ethereal creatures that comes. And I don't think they're really part of the movie as far as I remember.
Yeah, they are.
I seem to remember them being in the movie. Yeah.
Yep. The Skeksis and the whatever ancient dudes are the split of this ancient.
Really?
So I guess you'll see how they get
to spoil the Dark Crystal. The end of it is they go back together and form this race.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
I think if you love Dark Crystal, you should buy it. If you don't love Dark Crystal, you're crazy. But If you don't, then there's other better fantasy stuff, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. This is definitely not a book for people who are just like, ah, I heard Dark Crystals, but I should try this thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's never the way to do things, though. It's not like you haven't seen Star Wars and you read Star Wars comics.
Yeah.
And I don't feel crazy people might, but.
Yeah. I don't feel this would be too confusing if you haven't.
No, I don't feel like it'd be confusing. I feel like you wouldn't care.
Yeah,
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
All right. So, but yeah, I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it. Yeah. It kind of made me want to watch Dark Crystal again.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so moving on.
Speaking of, have you guys seen the making of Dark Crystal?
No.
Remember like those crazy four-legged Strider things that were like had 10-foot long legs?
Oh yeah, they're like dudes on stilts.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was bananas. They showed the making of those people running around. I'm just like, these people are crazy. It's amazing.
Anyway. There's a guy that goes to conventions that has like a costume of one of those. That's
all right, that's less amazing. That's terrible.
It's kind of amazing.
I'm amazed he does it.
It's also kind of sad. All right, so moving on to Lobster Johnson, The Burning Hand. Every time I say Lobster Johnson, it cracks me up.
Especially when you say The Burning Hand.
Yeah, The Burning Hand. Lobster Hand, The Burning Johnson. This is by Mike Mignola and John Arcudi, and art by Tonki Zonjic.
So yeah, so that,
which I also like to say. Yeah.
That's the guy who drew Who is Jake Ellis. So
it is.
I did not realize he was doing that. So I opened the comic, I was like, whoa, this looks amazing. So Lobster Johnson is a spinoff of the Hellboy series in that he is a 1940s era pulp adventurer type, much like the Shadow or any of those kind of characters. And his gimmick is that he has on the palm of his hand a claw shape, like a lobster claw.
Yeah.
And when he deals out justice, he will, you know, slam his hand onto someone's head and burn the mark into their forehead.
Yeah.
So hence, you know, face the wrath of the Lobster Johnson or whatever it is. But anyway, so he's running around fighting Nazis and spies and all that kind of pulpy two-fisted adventure stuff. So that's the background of him. I thought this one was awesome.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. It's kind of weird because Lobster Johnson is only in it like for like two or three panels or something. But it's mostly about this reporter who's investigating. It starts off really crazy in the beginning of this. Like somebody gets scalped and there's all these people dressed like Native American ghosts.
Running around a city.
Yeah. And then Lobster Johnson fights them and takes them out. And then this lady's trying to investigate what's happening and why these mobsters are kind of starting some kind of gang war. And it's pretty cool.
Lobsters and mobsters, man.
Lobsters.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes a little sense that Lobster Johnson's not in it that much because this is very much setting up this whole, you know, it's like the crime. It's like the inciting incident of this story.
Right. But no, that's how he kind of treats it, as Lobster Johnson's more like very much like the urban Batman myth. Like he is not a character who you get like his perspective if he just shows up, does stuff, and then vanishes. So he's very cool.
Well, that's definitely what happens in this comic.
Yep.
But no, it was a cool setup. I mean, it's basically what you guys described. I mean, there's not that much more to say about it. The art's great.
Art's so good.
Yeah, the art's really good.
Yeah. Tonki Zonjic. Wait, Zonki Tonjic? Tonki Zonjic is he's awesome. I mean, yeah, he does good stuff. I don't know who I'd compare him to. Maybe Frank Avila a little bit, maybe a little bit of Michael Lark or something like that. But
Chris Samnee.
Yeah, Chris Samnee. I think that's fair. But yeah, Lobster Johnson was a good comic.
Yes, sir.
Yep. All right. So moving on to Lords of Death and Life softcover by Jonathan Dalton.
I don't know what this is.
Yeah, Nick didn't get a chance to read this.
Sold out quick.
But Jared did read it, and I'd be curious to see what he thought about it, because
I really liked it.
Did you really like it? Okay,
didn't.
It's not that I didn't like it. Well, explain kind of what it's about, and then I'll tell you how I felt about it.
The reason it's called Lords of Death and Life is this is a comic set back in ancient Mesoamerica when the Mayan people, you know, who ran Tenochtitlan and all the giant cities of Mexico before the Spanish showed up. And it's just a dude who's having crazy mystic visions from one of the gods who he doesn't know. So he leaves his city to go to travel to another city to talk to the mystics there and see if they can interpret his dreams. And very quickly it becomes a kind of different ethnic group, civil conflict started up, and there might be actual mystical gods involved, or he might be going crazy and he meets a bunch of people. And it's an adventure story with weird mystical elements in ancient, Mayan times.
Right. But there's a huge shift in the way the story, not the way the story is told, but like it starts out as kind of this like geopolitical thing where they're talking about, you know, like the invading, they're not called Mexicans, but they're called like Mexico.
No, the Mexica or whatever. Yeah. Which I didn't realize that's where the country got its name, but yeah.
But then you were talking about the supernatural elements.
Yes.
Those come into like full effect in the last, you know, quarter of the book or whatever. And I thought that was interesting, but it was just kind of a weird book.
It was a weird book.
It never really did click for me completely. Okay. But it's not bad.
Yeah. I thought it was awesome. It's just like it's such a different setting to see comics do. I mean, it's like, oh, cool, I'm going to see samurai comics or cowboys or aliens. You know, it's just like such a different idea for having comics. And it was very well researched. He did a lot of stuff with like the glyphs and the writing system and stuff. So like they even used bits of dialogue and stuff like that. It was just, it was cool. And like all the cities looked amazing. So I thought that was the art. Now, maybe not just the art, but like the research in the art was awesome.
Yeah, there were like I didn't like his character drawing so much.
Yeah,
but I thought all the backgrounds and stuff were really cool. There are a couple scenes where they're like big markets, and I thought that was all really interesting and like really intricate. And actually, the art in the stuff I'm talking about later, which I just thought was weird inside of, I thought the story was weird towards the end.
Right, but the art was cooler.
It was like you could tell he was more into drawing this kind of like crazy iconographic cosmic stuff. Cosmic stuff. Yeah, yeah. So If you're interested in that period of time, and I think it's a really interesting, well researched book. But if you're, I don't know, I was never like fully engaged in the story.
Yeah, but it's cheap and it's a little book. The guy won his Eric Grant for it. That was pretty cool.
I was gonna say I haven't read this, but speaking of Mayan stuff, there's this comic called Sacrifice that we need to get, which has been kind of hard to get. It's about this guy who's like travels back in time and lives in like Mayan times.
yeah, we're getting those. We can talk about reorders, when we're not doing
that. No, but I mean, you're talking about Mayan comics, and that's all I had to say.
I'll talk about it real quick. Sacrifice is by the same writer as the guy who did Our Love Is Real.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. And basically, the idea is a Joy Division fan who has epileptic seizures. When he has a seizure, goes back into the Mayan times, but shows up in his, Joy Division t-shirt, and they're like, this is the symboled one who's come from the gods to do whatever for us.
It's like a cross between Red Wing and Phonogram.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, we're trying to get them. That's already sold out of its second printing, so we're trying to get the third printing. We're working on it.
So that's Lords of Death and Life.
Yeah. And Sacrifice.
Yeah, and Sacrifice. So moving on to the Monster Mess hardcover by Louis Trondheim. Is it Louis Trondheim?
I'm not sure. It's got to be Louis. It's written American style.
Yeah, I think it's Lewis. This is kind of a sequel of sorts, maybe, to the Christmas book that he did.
No, this is where it's weird. So this is the first appearance of this character, who's called, the monster is called Christophe, or Chris in French. They just call him Chris in this one. But they put out the second or third one in English first, because it was the Christmas-themed one, and they wanted to have it around Christmas. Mm. So this is the first appearance of this monster.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely like an origin story, this monster.
That's what I mean.
The basic story is like these kids are drawing, they're just drawing these drawings. I think they're actually probably drawings by Louis Trondheim's kids.
I am near positive.
Because you can't replicate children's drawings as well as
they're just so awesome.
And something about a special powder that they sprinkle on them that makes them come to life.
Yep.
But anyway, the drawings come to life and start causing trouble. So they try to draw a new monster to handle the first monster, but the new monster they draw is like kind of this goofy doofus monster that's like scared of everything.
He just wants to eat all the food in the fridge instead of eating the other monsters. And
it's very similar. Jared wasn't here the week we talked about it. There was a book called Sketch Monsters.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah, and the basic plot is similar, but where Sketch Monsters was a little bit more trying to teach kids about something.
About emotions.
Yeah, this is just like a comic that's fun to read.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And look at.
Yeah, it's got
fun.
Yeah, and it's structured a lot like a kid's book, I feel like.
Yeah.
But it's definitely still a comic. And I don't know, it's fun.
Yeah. This is a really good kids book.
Yeah, Louis Trondheim, we love. He's one of the best French cartoonists out there right now. He does a bunch of autobiographical comics where he draws himself as this weird duck man.
Yeah.
And that's how he draws himself in this. So I'm almost positive the guy is a comic book artist and his wife is a comic book colorist. So I'm sure it's like mom and dad or him and his wife and these are his kids. But he draws himself in like the duck form, but like a much goofier, shorter, stunted, like cartoony version, more than the other one. That's just amazing.
Yeah, it's great. The cartooning's great in it. And the monster they create, Christophe. He's so funny. I'm trying to think of like who I'd compare him to. He's like Snuffleupagus or something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's just fun. And it's not the kind of, it's not just like a comic where
I would compare him to the big blue one from Monsters, Inc.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
Sully.
Yeah. I was thinking Foster's Home. I was thinking Blue. But and it's not just a comic that like you're gonna be like, oh, I love French comics and I want to read this. You know, like kids will actually like this.
It's a great kids comic.
Yeah, it's a great kids comic. All right, so moving on to The Ray number 2 of 4 by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti with art by Jamal Ligel. people may remember that I had some problems with the first issue of the Ray.
Big Planet Comics podcast controversy.
Yeah, but I'm happy to say that those are all gone with the second issue.
Really?
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this. I mean, it's very much, I don't want to say throwaway, but it's very much just like a fun little superhero story.
Yeah.
But DC isn't quite known for doing fun little superhero stories, so yeah, it's kind of nice to see that.
Who wrote this one?
This is Palmiotti and Gray, who, of course, wrote the super fun Battle for Bloodhaven.
They did.
But
they wrote Jonah Hex for a long time.
They wrote Jonah Hex for a long time, and Jamal Igel did the art on this, and he drew Firestorm forever when Firestorm was really good. And actually, in tone, this reminds me a lot of the Firestorm stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool because it seems like all of this miniseries is about just him trying to get his girlfriend and her parents to, well, getting his girlfriend to kind of get her parents to accept him, and then him trying to deal with their parents
while becoming a superhero.
Well, yeah, while all this crazy stuff is happening that's tied to his creation, and then there's some crazy other superpowered guy trying to hunt him down. It's pretty crazy.
And there's like an alien invasion. The way he goes about making his girlfriend's parents accept him is really...
I couldn't believe it. Like, it took really me a second funny to realize what had happened. I'm just like, no one's this stupid.
Yeah, like he can change his appearance basically because he can control the way light bends. And so his girlfriend's Indian, and they don't approve of her having like a non-Indian boyfriend. So basically he makes himself look Indian and goes to dinner.
That's crazy.
And she, of course, you know, isn't very happy about that.
Yeah.
And but I thought that made the character a little more likable. He's kind of like a Peter Parker for the DC universe.
Yeah.
Stupid Peter Parker.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, Peter Parker's pretty stupid
that's
sometimes.
True. That's true.
Yeah, but I just thought this was fun. He's like fighting, invading
reverse
like
fish.
Manta rays, basically.
yeah,
that
stuff.
Yeah, that can't swim and can only fly. I don't know. Yeah. It's a superhero comic.
Yeah,
it's true. But it's a fun superhero.
It's really
comic.
Fun. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, that's it. That's the Ray number two.
So there you go. So this is, I think, our reviews of number twos are pretty interesting to see how things are changing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like a lot of setups in number ones can be really off-putting, and then they can kind of, you know, grow into what they're meant to actually be. Right. I feel like. Like, for example, Scarlet Spider number one by Chris Yost and Ryan Stegman. Nick, you're a big Scarlet Spider fan. Yeah,
I totally really like this. I didn't quite love it, but I really liked it. I don't know. I read all the Clone Saga stuff, so I have a little bit more of knowledge of Kane and all that crap.
I would think that would make you like it less.
True.
No, because... I don't know.
He's got so much scar tissue.
It starts off, it starts off really angsty, and like it's like all this internal monologue. Like Kane's like, "Oh, I'm a terrible person. Why have I done all these things?" And then he's like, "Oh, I don't care about these people." Like blah blah blah. And that's kind of like, I guess, probably what might have put you guys off of it, maybe a little bit. But then I feel like you know, as it goes along, it's kind of gets more lighthearted, and he starts being like, "Oh, maybe I should go help these people, and like maybe I should, you know." But it's cool because it's kind of like, because Kane was really dark character like the whole time. It's kind of, it would be really hard for them to just instantly start off with like the comic being like really lighthearted and fun. Well, I think like, I feel like it's going to get that way like as it's going along.
Well, I feel like it's going to get that way too. And I felt like they handled that already in the point one thing.
A little bit, yeah.
And I mean, I really do think I'm going to grow to like this series. I just felt like this first issue is like 75% angsty Kane.
Then
at the end, it's fine. But I just can't. It's he's such a 90s character.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's like that kind of thing that like Top Cow still does of like everybody's so tortured. And it's not what I want to read. And I love Ryan Stegman's art. He's an artist I've liked for a long time. And I think he's a great fit for this. And I do think the second issue of this is going to be better, like we were talking about. I couldn't, you know, all that stuff of like, he's like, you know, what is my life becoming? I try to do good, but it never works.
I think, so much of it was captions of his internal, like, monologue. Like, if it had just been him talking and none of that, I think this whole comic would have been a lot better.
Yeah, that's the only stuff that really put me off.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of that in this
That's
comic.
What I mean.
Yeah, there's a pretty good amount. But I don't know. I thought the story was pretty cool.
Yeah. It was a good story. But
I'm not a big fan of Kane as a character. I think.
But I think he's going to start growing a little bit, which is cool. Because if you read the stuff in the back, it's pretty cool because they're like, this is kind of the beginning of like our, you know, transformation of the character to become something completely different. So
yep. Which I'm fine with. I'm going to keep reading it.
So so check back in a month and we'll review.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about the second issue of this, and I will probably I'll change my opinion. I mean, I already think I love like the last quarter of this comic. It's it's just the whole beginning, and I don't think we're going to see any more of that stuff.
Yeah, so hopefully not. You kind of have to get it out of the way to kind of bridge the gap.
until Chuck Austin comes in and takes over. All right, so moving on to the Sparrow One hardcover. This is written by Josh Tierney, and this has art by a lot of people. Kyle Vanderklugged, Hwai, Emily Carroll, Olivier Pichard, Jordan Bouchon, Cecile Brun, Luke Pearson, Leela Wagner, and Matt Marblow.
The reason they did all that is, although this is another beautiful Archaea hardcover, it has four chapters, each of which is drawn by a different person.
Yeah.
And then at the back, it has a continuation of the story, but as like super short little chapters of like 8 pages each or something. So it's like mini chapters, each by a different person.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they did it that way, but I'm sure it was cheaper. I don't know, but I'll just say up front, this is a very pretty looking book, and the art on here is astounding.
Yeah, like, a lot of the art's
these
really
people
good.
Are either good or amazing.
Yeah, I think all the art's good, and especially I'm a big fan of Emily Carroll.
Yeah,
and she hasn't done much in comics. I think she did one short story in the Unexpected anthology,
right,
that Vertigo put out. But this is her section of this is awesome. Yeah, like the first four parts are kind of one big story.
Yeah, but not, I'm saying it just goes right on from that. It's just the short stories at the end are like shorter adventures, so it's less of the big story, more like side tracks or whatever.
Yeah,
so.
I kind of like the basic setup where it's like a princess or two princesses, really. Yeah,
that threw me at first.
And, like, one, they're from like warring kingdoms, but they're like friends.
Yeah.
And the one kingdom is about to attack the other one, and they don't want to be there, so they all kind of run off.
Are they both girls?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the one thing I didn't realize until the second chapter, because the first chapter, the one girl who's like a little bit more of a tomboy looks like a boy.
Yeah, I thought it was a boy.
Nope.
She's got short hair and like, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's kind of great, actually, that she's such a tomboy and has this like short little haircut and just wears like practical clothes.
Yeah, until they refer to her as her.
Yeah.
Or she or whatever, you know.
But yeah, two princesses.
She's like Arya.
And I liked the basic story, and like they have a cool like flaming wolf as their like guide.
Yonder.
Yeah. But I didn't really love the story too much. I kind of wanted a little more something. I don't know. I liked all the ideas in it were pretty cool, and I love the art, but like I felt like there were so many cool things that they were talking about, and like a lot of it didn't happen.
Fair enough.
Like, you know, they're like talking about these warring kingdoms, but you get no sign of any of the that. Like, you never see any of the soldiers or even their parents who are feuding and about to fight, and you don't really know what they're doing. I didn't get a good grasp of what exactly they were doing. They were just like, let's go on adventures.
Well, when you get to the shorter stories in the back, they do start doing that, because the tomboyish princess starts being tracked by evil magicians of her mother, and you start to realize that the reason this is going down is like her mom's pretty
well. That's
evil.
Kind of at the end. Yeah, it's like a little bit of that. But I don't know. I liked it a lot, and I'll read more of it as it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first volume, so but Jared, you liked the story a lot, didn't you?
I did. I think the thing about it is that this is an all ages comic, so in a lot of ways the stuff that is kind of more awesome they toned down a little, or like you said, they just wrote out.
Yeah.
Admittedly, they could have done more with it even in those terms, but
yeah, I mean, that seems like a little bit of a cop out though. I mean Bone's a kid's comic and Amulet's a kid's comic, and those both deal with pretty heavy things from time to time.
No, this has pretty heavy stuff. I mean, the one girl's mother is like evil and like is trying to kill her.
I mean, I can see why you're not going to see the war, because the whole point is they're kind of fleeing from that, you know. So they're not directly
still
involved.
Still could have shown some stuff, and
yeah, just to get a little more of an understanding of like who their parents are and why they're feuding. Or,
yeah, maybe like just a short thing at the beginning,
something,
some little interlude, just to get a, you know, see what they're up against.
But there is a story about a cat with an eye patch,
Chobo Warrior Tabby, which was my favorite part of this comic. It was so good. It's one of the short stories in the back, but it's just an adventurer cat. And it's not like Puss in Boots and Shrek or anything. It's literally just a cat with an eye patch who somehow manages to, with his non-opposable thumbs, end up stealing treasure and killing monsters.
I feel like this is the kind of book where a couple of years ago, I would have been just so happy for like a good kids comic to come out. But now there's so many good kids comics, you know. There's like, there's Three Thieves and there's Amulet and there's all this great stuff coming out.
There's Walker Bean.
Yeah, that I feel like I hold things to a slightly higher, like, bar of quality. And not to say that this isn't quality, it just doesn't blow me away like I feel like it maybe would have a couple of years ago.
Right.
Yeah, and the choice to do the different art style is kind of cool, but it's really jarring sometimes. Yeah. Like, and some of them, the characters look completely different. I was like,
yeah,
wait, are these the same people? Okay. Because they had even different hair, and I think some of them they were wearing different outfits. So yeah, I was like, Yonder, what is happening?
The magical wolf, Firefox, whatever he is, changes looks a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't mind that it switched artists because it switches to Emily Carroll.
Yeah, yeah.
Her art is really, really good. Yeah.
The other art's really good, too. Especially the first artist is really good. I can't remember who it was.
No, but it's a cool book. I mean, it's definitely a cool little thing. Kind of a surprising book, too, because we just ordered it not knowing much about it. And is this Arkea as well?
Yeah.
Arkea, man, I'm telling you.
Whoever's picking their stuff knows what they're doing.
They're doing some good stuff. All right, so moving on to... I don't think we'll probably talk about this too much. Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, ongoing number one by James Roberts and Nick Roche.
Yeah, there's nothing to meet the eye.
Well, the thing is, they had this long page at the back of it where the writer's like, I remember when I read my first issue of Transformers as a kid, and maybe some, and they say this is like the seventh relaunch of the Transformers series or seventh volume or whatever. He's like, and maybe 27 years from now, you will be the one writing the next thing of Transformers. I'm like, it doesn't bode very well for you. Yeah, I see your point.
I was like, I hope not. God.
Yeah.
I would hate to be writing a Transformers comic.
So should I talk about the story in this?
A little bit.
So basically we all came to this comic because we were like, okay, they're doing a new Transformers ongoing series. We'll give it a try.
Yeah.
Basically, this is just the next issue of whatever the last Transformers ongoing series was.
I don't think so.
Well, there was a huge war that happened somewhere, and they're like, this. Well, the cover says like the war is over now. Whatever, something else begins.
Yeah, this all comes right out of what just happened.
Oh, does it?
Transformers. But also, there's a bunch of parts where it's like somebody says something, and it's like read Transformers Volume 7.
Yeah, there are like many five, times. Six different parts like that. So I guess the idea is that the war in Cybertron is over.
Yep.
And the Transformers don't really have much to do. And some of them want to kind of hold the line and be there in case things flare back up.
And there's a bunch of like neutral robots that aren't Decepticons or Autobots that want everybody to just be neutral and just have peace. But they're like, we're Autobots. We're Decepticons. We don't want to change or whatever.
But then there's like another group that have like watched Battlestar Galactica a lot. And they want to go to like Cyber Utopia.
Yeah.
And so there's kind of this schism. It's very Battlestar Galactica.
They want to find the origin of the Transformers.
Yeah, and like the Knights of Cybertron or something like that.
And then, the other faction is Bumblebee and some other Autobots are staying behind to hold the line.
Which seems like it could be interesting, but it's
also
not.
There's two new Transformers series. This one's following the people that are going into space. And the other one's following Bumblebee and his...
Oh, so it's like Uncanny X-Men and Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah, it's exactly like that, except without anything good.
So there's some real... But beyond all that, there's some really bad things in this comic. There's a Transformer who transforms himself to death.
That whole scene. It wasn't intentional, but I was... laughing.
They were like,
so hard.
He destroyed his transformation cog or
whatever. They're like, he transformed himself to death.
And then he goes back into his car form or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's rigor mortis.
Rigor
mortis.
The doctor's like, he like transforms into a car and like, oh my god, he's alive. And you're like, no, don't worry. It's just a reflex action. It's rigor mortis. You're like, I just laughed so hard when I read that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know.
I will just say this. I actually found that for having not read Transformers in like 20 years or whatever, there was actually some really good characterization in this, like for having to work with a million Transformers who all look the same.
Yeah.
He did some good writing. This, I'll just say, if you have not been reading Transformers, if you do not love Transformers, this is not for you.
Yeah, and it's like nobody's going to just buy a Transformers comic if they don't like Transformers.
No, and I feel that's most not true. Because they did like the one where like Jay Lee was drawing it. There's definitely
Was awesome.
That's
that
my
was
point.
The G.I. Joe versus Transformers one that took place in World War II.
Yeah.
That was sweet.
That's my point. Like this could have been the jump on point for this book. Some awesome. If you haven't liked Transformers, check it out.
Yeah, that's true.
When Transformers relaunched in like 2001, there was that huge like, oh, I remember as a kid, everyone tried it.
Well, and then there was
that
whole Megatron series, which was actually pretty solid.
Yeah.
I will just, this comic is not More Than Meets the Eye.
That's all I'm saying.
So one of us had to say that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's whatever.
It's Transformers.
I didn't think it was really bad. Like, I kind of liked kind of what the story was about, and it was kind of interesting, but I was like, I don't really care about any of these characters. So I was like,
Yeah, I don't know about Transformers. Chris Campbell, who's a he listens a lot. Dude loves Transformers.
Really?
Yeah. Chris, write us in. Tell us what you thought about this. Yeah. If you're even gonna buy this, I don't know if you like Transformers that much. You're probably too busy. You don't have any money left. You're buying old Transformers with your money. This is better than Transformers movies. I'll say that much.
Recent movies.
Well, yeah, not Transformers the movie, because that awesome. Movie is awesome. It's got Orson Welles in it.
Although this seems to take place
in his last role.
It seems to be takes place in that universe, I guess.
It's all in that universe.
The Transformers universe?
Well, it's like it seems to take place like right after the movie or near the end of the movie.
No, I don't think so.
Because it's got like Hot Rod is like the the Optimus Prime.
Yeah, he's been like that for a long time.
There are 20 years of comics in between that.
Rodimus Prime.
Yeah, but it seems like it's in continuity with that, I guess.
Yeah. I think that was continuity.
Yeah, it's all continuity. You don't know nothing
about Transformers.
What are you talking about, Transformers?
You don't have the power. You don't have the touch. all right, so moving on to a comic worth talking about. This is Whispers Number 1 by Joshua Luna.
I think it's pronounced Whispers.
Oh, yeah, Whispers. wait. I wanted that to scare people. All right, so Whispers Number 1.
So Joshua Luna is one of the infamous Luna brothers, who are both from Virginia.
Infamous?
Infamous, because they're awesome. Famous. But this is the first time we've seen him. Did they do the art together on like the series that Bendis did when he was doing the Spider-Woman? Were they both drawing that one as well?
I can't remember.
I can't remember either. Well, anyway, it was just that, like, too often, it's always been them working together on both writing, or, like, one of them writes, and then they kind of do a combined art style that we're not really sure how it pulls off.
But well, one of them does the layouts, and the other one does, like, the finishes or whatever.
Well, this is very different from the, like, you can see the core of their art style in this one, but it's such a different, like, I don't want to say more refined?
No, not more refined. It's more realistic looking. Like, not as kind of cartoony and stylized. It's more, like, detailed and straightforward.
But awesome.
It's good though. Yeah, it's really, really good art. It's definitely not. It's definitely different from the rest of the books. But
I like their other stuff a lot. I'm just saying this is different, but equally cool.
The main thing with all of their stuff is like there's always a really cool like hook to the story.
Yeah, for the story. Yes.
Like the sword had like you know a girl who finds a magical sword and her parents get killed and she has to fight all these crazy gods or whatever, and then you know the. Girls like these girls show
crazy
up from outer space.
Horror
and,
girls from outer space. Yeah,
and this has a pretty interesting hook. I thought like this guy's talking to his friends, and he's like, "Oh, I had all these dreams where I saw all of you," and they're like, "Oh, whatever." And he's like, "No, but I think it was real. Like it really happened. Like I didn't just see you in my dreams. I think I went into your dreams or whatever." And they're like, "Yeah, whatever, whatever." And then you slowly see that like he's maybe did go into their dreams, and he can start controlling. Parts of them.
The twist is that he's got what OCD, like he's very like
he's very
germophobic
OCD,
and like OCD and stuff. So he's obviously got like mental issues. But then this thing happens, so you're like, is he just completely crazy, or is it like somehow a power tied to that, or whatever? So
it's clearly a power by the end, you know.
It's like it's weird too. He's kind of unlikable.
A little bit. He's a little bit of a like his girlfriend left him because he's kind of really like obnoxious.
He does
like,
freak out pretty impressively several times in this comic. Yeah.
But there's a part where basically his ex-girlfriend's going through this tragedy and he keeps trying to turn the like people are there to console her and he keeps trying to turn the conversation back to himself.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I thought that made him kind of an unlikable character. But I still thought that this was like a really interesting comic.
Yeah. And you get to see a little bit of why he could be kind of like the way he is because he goes. And near the middle, he like goes into his dream thing and like he's like, I'm going to go visit this person or this person. And he's like, wait, no, I don't want to. And then it does it automatically. And he's like visiting his mom. And you see like his mom's like kind of like a really crazy person. And like you can kind of see how he became who he is.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I think it'll be a cool like character arc. He'll change a lot, I think, by the end of this. But it's cool. It's a neat concept.
Yeah.
He can go into dreams and kind of control people by like telling them to do things while he's in his dream state.
Yeah, you can like suggest people to do stuff, and they won't usually do it.
Yeah,
so.
And it's really interesting to see this like completely different art style as well.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, we're just saying like, it's definitely different. It's more detailed and everything. So
yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I think it's gonna be a good comic.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
All right, so moving on to Wolverine number 300 by Jason Aaron and Andy Kubert with art by Ron Garney and Steve Sanders.
No.
Oh, no, sorry. This is written by Jason Aaron with art by Andy Kubert, Ron Garney, and Steve Sanders. The reason that there are so many different artists on this is because it's like, it's not 100 pages, but 80. It's long, 80 pages or something.
And I think probably Andy Kubert was supposed to draw all of it, but he's always really slow.
So you're probably hearing like Wolverine 300, you know, what I thought Wolverine was on, like issue 21 or whatever.
20 was the last one.
Yes. So Marvel's been doing this with a lot of their titles, kind of like they just did with Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Not as egregious with Fantastic Four because
that
was
with Journey into Mystery and Daredevil until they undid it with Daredevil.
And Iron Man. Yeah. They did it with that. So basically they're saying, all right, there have been like 300 Wolverine comics that have come out.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to just like make one Wolverine series.
Yeah. And the thing is, actually, if you flip in the back, they have the covers to all the issues that they kind of use, which is kind of a little bit of cheating. They use like Wolverine Weapon X and Wolverine Best There Is and stuff like that. But I noticed that there was never an issue 200 because the last issue ended like 189. And then there was a new series that they never just changed it back to 200. So there was like, you know, never issue 200. So
but there was also, like, all right, there was issue 900 and issue 1,000.
Yeah, and those are both included in the 300 issues, yeah, which I think is pretty funny.
That's amazing.
But the basic story of this is Wolverine is going back to Japan. But Nick said, I thought this would be a good jumping on point for us, but basically it seems like this was all set up in the last issue because I kind of had no idea what was going on.
Me neither.
There's a lot of setup in the last issue. Basically in the last issue, you see the Kingpin meet up with the head of the Yakuza, and they're like trying to call a truce because Silver Samurai is dead, and they're gonna somebody's gonna have to take over Japan, and it's gonna be the Hand or the Yakuza. And then somebody's trying to cause them to have like a war, like tricking them basically into having a war by like all these dudes attack them, and they're like, "What's happening?" And then the leader of the Yakuza gets thrown out of a plane by Sabretooth. and he's talking to somebody on the other line who's like, all right, our plan's going into effect. And so in this issue, like, the war is breaking out because of what happened in the last issue.
Yeah, I definitely felt like I was reading the after effects of something that I knew nothing about.
Yeah.
That being said, I actually thought it was a really good issue.
I mean, they had a lot to work with, but this was like manic pace just all over Japan. Wolverine doing all kinds of stuff. Sabretooth running around. Kingpin, Yakuza, ninjas. It was just like everything happening.
And there's
it was
a really,
awesome.
Really cool introduction to the new Silver Samurai who's really seems pretty awesome.
Yeah, and there's like a plane full of ninjas, and there's like Wolverine fighting Sabretooth like on a jetpack.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's lots of crazy stuff. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But I would say definitely if you're trying to jump in and read this, read the previous Wolverine issue because I'm going to have to read it tomorrow because I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
But overall, still a cool issue.
Yeah. One of the things that I really didn't like, it has nothing to do with this issue in general, but in the back it has like a preview for like the new Jeff Loeb, Simone Bianchi sequel to their like whatever run where Sabretooth got killed or whatever.
Right.
And it's called like Sabretooth Reborn or something like that. And it's like, in this comic, like Wolverine already knows that Sabretooth is back, but you're like, how does he know all this stuff? And then they're like, oh, it'll be revealed in this miniseries, which I feel is only happening because Simone Bianchi takes a long time to draw. Yeah. It even says in the back, it says like some to be continued sometime in 2012.
Wow. Well, and also that Jeff Loeb, Simone Bianchi thing is not a very well-regarded Wolverine story at all.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And actually this story that for the miniseries that they're doing was actually, they like announced it like well over a year ago.
So did Jeff Loeb write that backup thing?
Yeah, was the one with Simone Bianchi.
Okay, yeah, because that was really bad compared to the rest of the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dagger is dead, I guess?
No, she's just kidnapped or something.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah, I don't know. I thought I liked the issue. I thought the little backup was really stupid.
Well, it was just like basically like I think the first few pages to the main series.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, Wolverine 300, pretty good.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All right, so moving on to X-Men Legacy number 260.1.
Well, we talked about the point one thing.
We have talked about it. So this is written by Christos Gage and David Baldion. I'm assuming this is the new creative team for the book in general.
Yeah, and this does a good what the point ones were supposed to do kind of thing. Like it tells a done in one story that's a good introduction to the new status quo. And like this is the new creative team too. So it's a really good jumping on point. Like I haven't read X-Men Legacy since like issue of it or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, X-Men Legacy lost me when it was like all the, it was just like those stories about Professor X or whatever.
Yeah.
It was like not good.
And this is cool, and it's mostly about the rest of the people at the Jean Grey school, like where Wolverine, that takes, you know, it's like all the stuff from Wolverine and the X-Men, but focusing on the other characters that aren't the main characters from Wolverine and the X-Men. And it's cool, you get to see another side of it. It's basically, this more focuses more on the teachers, and it's like, it's a good companion to Wolverine and the X-Men. And it's got a little bit of that tone. It's kind of goofy and fun.
Is this the one where, like, there's basically an attack on the school and they're trying to hide it?
Yeah, yeah. Like, okay. They're basically, like, they want the school to continue. And so there's, like, an attack going on outside the school. And they're just trying to hide it from the students. And they're like, oh, we're going to be doing some demolition outside. And,
yeah, like, do independent study. I'm going to run outside real quick. And then they come back in all beat up. And
yeah, what I liked about this was, like Nick said, it's like a lot of it's a lot of different characters.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they put Christos Gage on the book, because I feel like he's done a really good job with Avengers Academy.
Yeah.
And I think that translates really well to this.
This is like X-Men Academy, basically.
Yeah, basically. It's like, it's not really new characters, but it's a couple new characters, or characters I didn't know, at least.
Yeah.
But it's just, he's really good at doing that young team dynamic thing.
Yeah.
And it works really well in this. It's like fun, you know. There's a football game at the beginning that they're playing,
yeah.
And they get attacked by these alien creatures and stuff, and
yeah, and they're trying to hide it from the kids, which is really funny, because Cannonball, like, is fighting these things and gets covered in goo, and he shows back to the class and he's like, oh, I had an accident outside,
while Toad is like cleaning him off.
Yeah, he's like, hurry up, it's melting through my skin.
No, yeah. But what's nice about this is it's like another good X-Men comic.
Yeah.
I'm not the X-Men guy, but right now Uncanny X-Force, Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine and the X-Men, and now X-Men Legacy are like all good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, who would have ever thought that would happen?
Yeah. Just X-Men is the rotten apple.
We'll see what they do with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. So that's it for the issues this week. I say that's it. That's a lot of issues this week. But yeah, so I mean, we got a couple other things to talk about.
Like what?
Like a couple weeks ago, we asked for people to send in good X-Men comics for us to read.
Oh yeah.
And Mike Kogel sent us in a list of some stuff, so we're going to kind of start going through that, and we're going to start with the first one. You guys ready?
Yep.
We're going to learn about X-Men comics. All right, so this sorry, I don't know why I did that.
I don't know either.
This is called an execution.
I'm executed already.
All right. I feel like everybody just died. I blew up everybody's ears.
Hit me with some X knowledge.
All right. So what we read was Uncanny X-Men number 159.
Yeah.
Night Screams by Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz.
Didn't Mike say this was the first X-Men issue he got?
He said it was. So this is a good spot for us to start.
I thought it was just interesting that this was brought up at the store, and like instantly everyone in the store, no matter what they're reading now, all like, oh, my first X. It's like such a memorable thing for people as kids.
It's pretty cool that I thought this was a pretty neat example of kind of how comics used to be a little bit, and how they're sort of getting back to that. But it's like, it's got a lot of smaller subplots going on. Like the beginning is like Cyclops and Havoc, like, they just kind of met each other recently, and their dad is there from outer space, and he's like, I'm gonna hang out here for a little bit. And then the X-Men are in New York, right?
Yep.
And they're like in this apartment that belongs to like Misty Knight and Colleen Wing. And then Storm gets attacked by Dracula.
It is definitely like that very old school. X-Men was like that for a long time. It was it was so popular, but the new readers were coming in all the time, so they would have to kind of recap everything that was going on. Right. So I feel like all these older issues, at least from what I understand, at the beginning would be like, here's kind of everything that's going on in the bigger overall story.
Right.
Yeah. And then they would get into their single issue stories. Yeah. And yeah, this one is about Dracula.
Yep. I thought it was an amazing format. Like Nick said, no one does this anymore, and yet I think it would work really well for a lot of comics.
Wolverine the X-Men kind of does it now.
And Daredevil does it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, sure, they do it a little bit, but those are both relatively new relaunch directions of the book. It's not like X-Men's been coming out for, what, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years at this point?
Yeah, and this is pretty far into like Chris Claremont's run.
Yeah, exactly, where it's been one guy leading it for a long time, and there's huge storylines that have been building up and a lot of character stuff between these people.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's like Cyclops' brother Havoc just showed up, and his dad from outer space who's been a space pirate for the last 20 years.
And like Professor X is like in a coma.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I mean, for one, Bill Sienkiewicz drawing this, which is a very different take on what you think of as the old X-Men style. But
yeah, and this is very different from his like kind of well-known sketchy style. This is like his older style. It's more traditional.
That style shows up like a couple times in the issue.
Yeah, it's great. There he is.
But so basically the idea is like Kitty Pryde and Storm are just like going out for a night on the town.
Going shopping.
Yeah. And
or something.
And Kitty Pryde goes out and she's like partying, and Storm basically disappears, and they find her, and she's got like a bite on her neck.
Yep.
She's like all messed up. And she slowly starts turning into a vampire.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she's in the thrall of Dracula and starts attacking the other X-Men characters.
I think this might be the first time that X-Men had an encounter with Dracula, maybe.
It is, because Kitty's like, I think she's attacked by a vampire, but no one will believe me.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. And then I think after this, they actually encounter Dracula a bunch of times. And they usually involve Storm like kind of reverting and being like, oh, I'm under his control again.
Yeah, isn't there even like an Apocalypse and Dracula storyline?
Yeah. And actually, I think a little while after this, like a couple issues after this, well, I don't know how it fits in, but there's like a giant size annual that kind of is a sequel to this, where I actually kind of like read that one too. And it's like a sequel to this. So Dracula shows up again and he like takes Storm under control. And, but by the end of this, it's a lot more dramatic than this. It's pretty awesome. I would've asked you guys to read this, but I read it like right before we started this. And it's like, I don't know. It ends with Wolverine putting a stake.
Well, we'll read that one at some point.
Stop ruining.
Yeah. But you talk about dramatic, because I did feel like the resolution to this comic was just like a little weird.
Yeah.
It was like Storm was just like, oh, no, I'm too powerful.
She's just so mentally powerful that she could overcome Dracula.
Yeah. And that's kind of just the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Dracula's like, oh, I love you so much. I'm never going to hurt you.
No, but it was also interesting that
I want you to be my queen.
It was like a villain who comes in who's obviously threatening and was beating the crap out of all them. They have a crazy fight in Central Park, and he has a hidden base in the little castle in Central Park, which was interesting. But then he's like, I'm going to go. You know, it's just like, ooh, another villain. He's off. You know, there's more trouble down the road, basically, which is an interesting way of writing a series.
Yeah, it's a very old school way, but it works. Yeah. I mean, it was a fun comic, definitely. And a lot goes on in it. And yeah, I mean, it was cool. I haven't really read much X-Men from this time period, so I was happy to read this. And yeah, I thought it was fun.
It was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, what is this? About a year after Days of Future Past, something like that? About a year and a half after? Probably. So, yeah. No, cool. That's the X-Men comic. I didn't sing that time.
Thank you.
I'm gonna sing every time.
Oh
yeah, it's gonna be awesome. All right, so that's pretty much it. Well, let's talk about what's some other stuff you guys have been reading.
I caught up on the entire run of the new Batwoman series that J.H. Williams is drawing and co-writing.
Nice.
As it was on one of our best artists of 2011 thing, and a lot of people have been raving about it, and I'd only read the first two or three, and reading it as a chunk is amazing. Like all five issues that are out, it does kind of make me regret the new 52 in some ways, because this is so clearly an artifact of the pre-52. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, Batman wants to recruit me for Batman Incorporated, you know, and it's like, which we were vaguely going to mention in the new 52. It's just, I don't know. It makes me just wish that, DC just been like, everyone take their books and do something awesome with it instead of having a big first relaunch.
But, yeah, the thing with DC is they're so concerned with their continuity and like how well it works. People complain about Marvel continuity, but it definitely opens them up and lets them do some more stuff.
Did you guys hear? There's a big Batman crossover coming.
Is there?
Yep, this year.
Batman with Batman.
With all
Batman.
The books.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it ties into like the current...
That's kind of interesting, actually.
The Owl storyline and Batman.
Well, that's a good storyline.
And it's like Night of the Owls or something, which seems pretty cool. And it mostly takes place in Batman with ties to like tie-ins and all the other Bat books.
But it's going to be what always happens. It was like, remember the Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul crossover?
Well, the thing is, the main story only takes place in Batman, which is cool. And the other stuff are just like side stories. Instead of it like, read this issue of Nightwing next, and then read this issue of Batwoman. It's just like all in Batman, and then the other ones are side stories.
Yeah.
Because there's an issue of All-Star Western that ties into it.
Sweet. Oh, that's weird.
It shows like the history of the Owls.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. They definitely built up the Gotham history in All-Star Western.
It's, I guess, DC's first big crossover since their whole thing started.
Well, they're doing the Animal Man and Swamp Thing.
And already like Frankenstein and OMAC crossed over.
Yeah, they just crossed over. Yeah.
Didn't Grifter fight Green Arrow?
Yeah, but that wasn't a crossover as much. It was just like an issue.
Yeah.
It was like Nightwing was in Batgirl as well. But like the OMAC Frankenstein thing that just happened actually took place in the two different series.
Yeah. Gotcha.
What about you, Nick? You've been reading anything not new?
What did I read that was not new? Come back to me in a second.
Well, I had a couple days off, and I've been reading the Frank Miller Daredevil run, which I've never read before.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Like, a lot better than I thought it was going to be. You know, I just read Holy Terror a couple months ago, so I'm, not expecting too much from Frank Miller. But I kind of started, not where he started drawing, but when he started writing it.
Yeah.
And it just jumps right into some amazing stuff. It's like the first story is a really cool Doc Ock story, but then it goes right into, like, first appearance of Elektra, and then this crazy Bullseye story where Bullseye... is let out of this insane asylum, and he thinks everybody he sees is Daredevil, and he's just like killing people on the street because he thinks they're Daredevil.
That reminds me of what I caught up on. I caught up on Punisher Max, Jason Aaron one, and it's so good. And yeah, the series got canceled, but you can clearly tell that he definitely knew it was going to get canceled. This feels like the last Punisher story. Punisher Max is like out of continuity. It's its own universe or whatever. You definitely feel like this. I read the recent issue that came out this week, and it's like basically Punisher fighting the Kingpin, and it's like this epic fight, and Punisher gets really, really messed up. And at the same time, it keeps flashing back to different parts of his life, even from stuff from the previous Punisher Max series. It shows stuff from that, and then his wife, and then she's like talking about how like he's going off to war, and like he needs to promise her to come back home, and like, you know, it's been showing how he never actually came back home because he was different when he came back, and like, and then at the end he's like, I got to go back home. And he actually goes back to the house that they lived in. That's all boarded up. And he's like dying.
No, it's like the end of Rambo.
It's pretty crazy. Cause it, nice. The end of this issue. Well, spoilers if you haven't read it yet.
No,
but
don't
like,
tell anybody.
It doesn't really give anything away. He basically is like really messed up walking back to his house, and he collapses right in front of the house. And then the next issue, the cover's like Punisher RIP.
Yeah. Oh, and one of our customers, William, has been loaning me the Richard Stark Parker novels, the crime series. And so I've read the first five of those. They're really short, but they're nice. Awesome stuff. And then I've been rereading the Darwin Cook Parker comic book adaptations and just seeing the differences.
Nice.
They're both awesome.
I've been reading Great Expectations, but I haven't been reading any comic versions of Great Expectations.
Did you read Last of the Greats?
No, I haven't caught up yet. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well, I'm also going to read this Venom novel that I acquired.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
I'm gonna try to read it. I don't know, we'll see.
That'll be fun. I'll be curious. Somebody traded in some books at our store, and one of the things they had was a Venom prose novel.
Spider-Man Venom novel. Yeah,
so Nick's gonna read that.
I'm gonna try to.
It's gonna be the first novel he's read in like 10 years. It's gonna be a Spider-Man novel.
Yeah, one of the greatest novels of all time.
Obviously. Do you know who wrote it?
It's somebody who's a New York Times bestseller.
Oh boy, it must be good then.
It's a sheet.
Oh, is it Robin Cook?
No.
All right. So anyway, that's it for this week's episode, I think, right?
Yes.
We're done.
Yeah, we went off the rails. Yeah. I think it was when I sang that X-Men song.
It did
everybody
not help.
Everybody lost it. Yeah. All right, anyway. So, that's it. We'll be back next week. And see you guys later.
See you.